Chris is a maitre d' at a French restaurant soon to open in Albuquerque. He was incarcerated for 15 months at the Central New Mexico Correctional Facility, serving his sentence for an attempted bank robbery. So, Chris, if you could share with us the details as to why you were sent to prison.
The charges that I was sent to prison for were conspiracy to commit armed robbery with a deadly weapon. I was with two other people, and one of them, I found out later on, was a bank robber and was wanted nationally by the FBI. So we'd made a decision that we were going to rob a bank called Santa Teresa National Bank. And by the grace of God, nobody went into the bank. But we were caught in a roadblock in Las Cruces. They'd identified the man I knew, who was with. His name was Poncho. I don't know his first name or his last name. And we were stopped. And he ran, and he was shot to death. And I remember being on my knees and surrendering and realizing that it wasn't so much as a legal problem, even though I knew I was going to prison. It was more of a problem that I was having in my life that was a result of my drug addiction. And it was a bad day. It was a bad day.
How were you feeling about yourself at this point in your life?
The past 2 years, I'd been estranged from my family, and I was involved with an organization in Denver where we were selling drugs. And I'd made a decision to go to El Paso to try and get my mother to pick me up in Juarez to help me get clean. And I knew at that point in time that nobody was going to know I was in New Mexico. So I was scared. I was also strung out, and I was detoxing from crack cocaine and Oxycontin. And I was basically confused.
So how long had, at that point, had you been on drugs?
At 11, I started smoking marijuana and drinking. And I finally found some peace within myself. Through drugs and alcohol, I felt like everything was going to be okay. I got into cocaine around 12 or 13, and on a regular basis from 14, I was using cocaine on a regular basis until I had a brief period where I stopped at 23 for a year, and then I got back on alcohol and drugs, and I pretty much had that lifestyle until I was incarcerated.
By the way, how old were you when this attempted robbery?
No, I was 41.
How were you taught, or how did you learn to resolve conflict as you were growing up as a young adult?
I learned to look outside of myself, that external values would create success. And if I was successful and people looked at me as a successful human being, then inside I would feel like I was doing okay. And I think that's one of the reasons I reached for drugs, because it was something outside of myself. I felt that I had an attitude as a child of, I'll show you. Someday, I'll show you someday. And I built my life around that philosophy. And that philosophy was, you know, someday I'll have more money than you. Someday I'll have a nicer car. I'll have all these tangible things so that I'll feel okay inside. Because as a child, I always felt disconnected. I felt like I wasn't a part of. I lived in the ghettos of Oakland, California on welfare, and I was the only, me and my twin and my brother were the only whites in our neighborhood, and my stepfather was a heroin addict, and we were on welfare, and there was a lot of violence in my home, and so I continuously wanted to get outside of myself to feel okay. So I would always live for tomorrow, and that's pretty much where my life took me. My life took me into feeling that if I was successful, then I was okay. And I wasn't even close to being okay. I kept building things up to destroy them. You know, I would get good restaurant jobs, or I would start working as a manufacturer's rep for someone. And then finally I was able to open my own company, and I started making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year representing various consumer electronics companies. And I had so much money that I didn't run out of drugs, so I didn't really think I had a problem until one day I was told I was no longer allowed into an account I was doing $10 million a year with, and suddenly I was fired from every company I represented, and my life took a turn, which I think led to the road I took for the bank robbery. because I felt like I was entitled to a certain standard of living. And that's the journey I walked, and the choices I made are what led to my incarceration.
I'm really interested in hearing how you served your sentence. It seems to me those in prison have choices as to how they're going to spend their time there. Some can continue to, if they had anger, they can remain in that anger. They can feel revengeful. They can just feel like they're going to hang out. Some can be remorseful. Some could look for accessing services and making decisions to improve themselves. And I think some of these choices are probably conscious and some are unconscious. How would you describe what your approach was when you were incarcerated? What choices did you make?
That's a good question. When I surrendered on my knees to the various law authorities and law enforcement authorities in New Mexico, I realized that my surrender wasn't about not wanting to get shot. My surrender was about wanting to live. And they talk about in the 12-step rooms a moment of silence. And I remember there was a moment of silence after I heard the radio squawk, and it went, shots fired, man down, shots fired, man down. And Heidi was on her knees crying, and I looked at her, and there was a moment of silence. And I felt like I heard the prayers of the men and women of the various 12-step programs reaching out to me, and I knew that it was going to be a new day. And I knew that no matter what, I was going to go to any length to stay clean, no matter how much time I was facing, no matter what I went through, no matter what, I was going to stay clean, because I knew that if I stayed clean, I had a chance at a new life.
Who was Heidi?
Heidi was the woman I was in love with at that time.
So she was a participant in the robbery as well?
Yes. Yes, she was. And she too, you know, had a normal life and raised children and was a businesswoman. And through drugs and alcohol, that's where her life led to her. Led her to that same roadblock. She currently is in Colorado, in Denver. She was expedited up there, and she also made the decision to stay clean. And she's been clean now since the same day I have, which is February 28th of 2005. I went into a holding facility, and I immediately started talking about Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous and the various 12-step programs, and that we have a new way to live. And I was like a mini Tony Robbins running around until one day there was a bunch of methamphetamine that hit the facility. And a couple of the guys didn't like the fact that I had, you know, books of various recovery programs in my cell. And I was holding a meeting called Junkie Church on Sunday mornings. And on Thursdays, I had attitude adjustment. And I'm talking to all these gangbangers and these dudes. And I'm saying, hey, man, you know, come to my cell, man. Find some recovery. You don't want to get into that. And I woke up. I'd done a third step, which is where we turn our will and our lives over the care of a power over to our God, you know. And I did this third step, and I walked out of my cell that morning, and you know, I'm expecting peace, and some cat came up to me, and he was like, "Hey, man, you got to leave. You need to get out of here. You're not welcome here anymore. We don't want that stuff going around here." And you know, by being in a prison setting or, you know, an institutional setting, no one is going to tell me what I have to do and what I can't do. No inmate. And I made the decision that, you know, no matter what, I was going to stand up for my recovery. And so I went in the showers and I fought with about six guys and I was put in maximum security. And that's where, you know, I found a transformation. That's where I realized that the day I hit maximum security for fighting, I realized that, you know, it was time to do the work. It was time to write. It was time to do an inventory. It was time to look at my behaviors and what led to where I'm at in my life. And by doing this exercise and meditation and I was doing my own meetings every day. I was locked up 23 hours and 15 minutes a day. I found this freedom, this peace within. You know, and that's what I'd been looking for my whole life, was a feeling of everything's okay. And for the first time in my life, I realized it's not about outside issues. It's about it's about internal issues, and it's about dealing with the conflict within, and finding your peace within. And so, every day I had a routine, and it was a physical routine of exercise. I did an NA meeting. I did an AA meeting. It was amazing. It was amazing the amount of peace I found in a 9x10.
So despite your best intention in prison not to get into your anger, you did have a moment where there was anger, and you got into a fight with some of the other inmates.
Well, Carol, you're in a situation where it's there's a code of living, and if you hit that button in UPC, you will have a miserable existence. Okay, so
what does PC refer to?
Protective custody. Okay, protective custody from the other inmates. Okay, and it's the most dishonorable, most disrespectful code of conduct that can ever happen in a prison to a man. You have to stand strong for what you believe in, and no matter what the consequences are. It's all fine and dandy on the outside, but when you're living in that society, to show fear, to be a coward, is a sentence of being known as PC'ing, which is a miserable way to live. So, you know, I made the decision that no matter what, I'm going to stand up for what I believe in. And if that means having to resolve it with violence, which was not my choice at that point in time, it was going to happen one way or the other.
That was a conscious decision then to do that?
So it was a conscious decision that no man is going to tell me how I can live in an institution, you know, another inmate. And I chose to live clean. And I know that staying clean is about carrying a message of hope, strength, and experience. And if I want to stay clean, I'm going to go out to every inmate I can and every man that's seeking recovery, and I'm going to carry that message regardless of the consequences. And those consequences were very violent. They were very brutal. But you know what? I walked the line. And I walked the line as a man in recovery, and never did any other inmate ever question who I was as a man. Did they question my recovery? I was respected for it throughout the rest of the time I was there. The people that came at me sent me a kite. They apologized. And I'll tell you, the change is right before I left prison, the dude that was running the shot collar came to my prison. And I had some other guys come to me and said, this guy's here. What do you want to do? We will take him out for you. And I chose not to do that. And he was asked, listen, you cannot live in this facility. You need to move on. And he PC'd. And he'll spend the rest of his time incarcerated in a 9x10. You know, but it didn't come down to violence. It came down to respect.
So what's different now that you're out of prison in terms of yourself? Can your buttons still be pushed?
No, because what I try and do today is not react. I try and act. And that's where I talk about, you know, taking a pause. I'm not responsible for my first thought, but I'm responsible for where I take it. So what I try and do is if I'm in a situation that has conflict, I pause. And I go to God and I say, God, what would you have me do? I don't know. I just don't buy into that. I don't buy into conflict resolution through violence because it got me nowhere in my whole life. My stepfather was a very violent man. He's dead. He died on the streets of San Francisco. You know, my twin brother internally was torn apart because of violence, and he died with a needle in his arm. In all alone in a room, and that was the way he dealt with it, with a suicide drug overdose. So for me, I'm learning how to live, you know, and by learning how to live, it's about spiritual principles. And spiritual principles are about having honesty, having forgiveness. I think forgiveness is the biggest key that we can have in our life. And forgiveness is about not only me forgiving you, but hoping that you will forgive me, and in turn, the greatest gift I get is I'm able to forgive myself, you know, and that's the key to transformation, is forgiveness. And it all starts with honesty and openness and willingness. And those are the spiritual principles that I define my life by. So as far as someone else changing that code of conduct, that's not going to happen today. I won't allow it to happen.
Let's talk a little bit about what you encountered when you were released from prison. Were there any conflicts that you found yourself experiencing within yourself and, you know, with others or with society per se?
I remember very vividly, I was released April 21st of 2006, and I got out of a van. It was almost like getting out of an embryo where they opened the doors. And suddenly, when I was being released from prison, I started getting these feelings of entitlement again, okay, which has always been my downfall. And I remember riding in the van and thinking, I don't have a window. I deserve a window. I got off the van, and I had my TV in one hand and my little prison suit. You know, they give you these blue polyester pants and a polyester blue shirt, which, you know, I kind of like to wear cotton, so I was a little insulted by that too. And I went into the parole office, and they gave me the number to a place called Dismiss House, and which is where I made the decision to parole, because Dismiss talked about a transition. We help people transition, and that was a key word for me, was transition and transformation. And so I called a gentleman named Tony, and he came and picked me up, took me to a bank, which was an interesting experience. I actually cashed a check for $40, and, you know, it was wild, because for a second there I thought, what if I robbed the bank? Tony would never know. He can drive me back to the halfway house, but I didn't, obviously. So Tony said to me, he goes, you're going to be, you got a curfew of 7 o'clock. And I said to Tony, listen, I got to go to an NA meeting. He goes, no, I can't allow you to do that. I said, well, check it out, man. Turn the car around. He goes, excuse me. I said, turn the car around. If I can't go to an NA meeting, then you might as well take me back to prison, because I'm not going to come out and not be allowed to participate in my recovery because I won't make it. And Tony goes, really? You're that serious about it? And I said, yeah. He goes, well, call your sponsor, man. And so ever since then, I've really connected in the fellowship in Albuquerque, and it's been a gift.
You attend a lot of meetings, don't you?
I do 7 meetings a week minimum, and I do H&I work, which is hospitals and institutions. And I go into a detox center every Sunday and talk and carry a message of hope, strength, and experience to the people who are still suffering. And I also am involved with the prison system with a program called Clean Connection, which is hooking men and women up with people that are in recovery when they're released from prison. They say that if you make a meeting in your first 24 hours, you've got a 90% chance of staying out of prison for the first 90 days. So that's a real important issue in my life. And I also sponsor a few men.
Does this very, very full life, I'm putting in the very, stress you out at all? How do you take care of yourself in terms of balance?
I go to God, and I ask God, what would you have me do? And I try and get out of the concept of what would I do? And you know, I ask myself to be removed from the bondage of self, because still I have the internal tapes that play from when I was a child, you know, the in tapes that I'm not good enough, I'm gonna fail, and so, you know, I found myself with 18 months clean after I got back from Denver, and I came back to Albuquerque, and I hit my knees and I said, God, take my will, take my life, show me how to live. You know, I can't do this. And by doing that and turning it over, then I'm not running the show. And when I'm not running the show, I'm a lot safer. The community's a lot safer. Everybody around me is going to do a lot better. And I get that peace because I don't have to control it, you know, which is an illusion anyway. I don't have any control.
You're about to graduate the program at Dismiss, and you're going to be moving into your next apartment, hopefully next week. I would imagine that feels like a big accomplishment for you.
Yeah, it does. And once again, I've been given a gift. I'm going into a 14-month program called Via de Paz, and Via de Paz is run through Healthcare for the Homeless, and it's a recovery-based community. And I will have my own apartment, and I will pay my rent, but I'll have some accountability. which I realized that I've only been out of prison 4 months. And even though I've been clean almost 19 months, I have to look at, there is a huge difference between being institutionalized with a routine every day and then being back in society. So I've made the choice to continue and go a little deeper in my recovery and deal with some psychological aspects that I can work on, you know, on what really led to the downfalls, what really led to 'cause, you know, it's real simple to say it was all about the dope. It wasn't. There was something wrong before the dope. You know, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, they always talk about he wants to become Dr. Jekyll again, but I would never want to be Dr. Jekyll because Dr. Jekyll had some serious problems that he wanted to turn into Mr. Hyde. So, you know, I have to look deeper than the substance and start dealing with some psychological issues, some accountability. And with that in place, then I feel like I will continue to be a responsible, productive member of society. And be able to give back to society. And that's what I want to do today. Because the more I give, the more I receive.
So was there anything difficult for you other than those first moments of having a van without a window and getting the clothes that you're not accustomed to that felt hard about integrating back into society?
I'm real fortunate. My father sent me about 100 pounds of clothes on day three. So, in the halfway house I'm in, I went through a program called CCU, which I'm still in, which is community corrections. And if you get into community corrections, they pay for your rent for the first 2 months, which for me, being a man coming out of prison and trying to transition into society, it was a great break because even though it's, got a lot of criteria that you have to follow, if you follow that, you find yourself getting more freedom allowed to you.
What advice would you have for others who find themselves in perhaps a similar place? Not everyone has those moments of transformation. Not everyone is as immediately committed to turning themselves around as you. But what advice would you have?
It's a really good question because if you're talking about somebody coming out of prison, I would recommend that you find a halfway house.
Why would you recommend someone finding a halfway house? Why don't you elaborate on that a little
bit
more?
Well, because if you don't, I can only speak from my experiences. I'm not from New Mexico. I didn't know anybody in New Mexico. And the halfway house I went to, I started out with a roommate. Then I got my own room. They gave me food. They gave me shelter. And it was imperative to have that in your life. When you're struggling and you don't even have a place to go to, your chances go down huge. When you're hungry, your chances go down huge of success. So by having that opportunity, what I had was it created freedom. And it created freedom to pursue my recovery because without my recovery, I would go back to prison. You know, and the thing is, you know, everybody can talk about why the recidivism rate is so high, but I do believe there is an industry out there in prison and there are challenges. But if you do not drink or use, you're going to make it 9 out of 10 times. I truly believe that. Now throw in the other factors of being in a place that gives you your own room where you start to value your freedom. And you start to have your privacy because there is no privacy in an institution. So then you start to cherish that and you're going, I want, you know, this by giving me this, I want to try and find some more freedom. Because most men and women that come out of prison, their first thought is, I want to go back. Because it's very overwhelming. You know, the introduction back into society is very overwhelming. You know, and when you're carrying a felony record like mine, my first job interview, we had a great dialogue. I was talking to her about, you know, I did $10 million a year with U.S. West and da 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 da. And she said, well, what did you go to prison for? And I said, conspiracy to commit armed robbery with a deadly weapon. She said, it's been a really nice interview. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to get back to you. We really want to hire you. And I knew the interview was over. But you know what? I had a place to go back to. I had dinner that night. I had people come in from the community and serve me food, and I had a meeting to go to, and I had community corrections, which was paying my rent. So all of that stress wasn't sitting in front of me, and I was able to go, okay, tomorrow will be a better day.
So I want to thank you so much, Chris, for talking to me today. And Chris is a maitre d', and he'll be working at a French restaurant soon to open in Albuquerque.
Thank you very much, Carol. I appreciate it.